It's Sunday, February 2nd, Toronto to Manhattan, and this is Bob talking to Susan. Here
and
she
my
is.
My birthday.
And it's Bob's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
I'm 81. Okay,
can,
Susan.
Yeah, you can hear me?
Yes.
Yes, happy birthday.
Thank you, Susan.
You're welcome.
81 years old, that's hard to believe, but it's true.
Wow, very, aged, but I'm sure wise in your years.
Oh, no, there's no truth. Nobody gets wise. That's the first lesson one learns. And
yes.
No kid is told.
No kid is told?
Yeah, that adults don't get wise.
Ah, yes, it's a secret.
That's the original secret.
So I guess maybe our first conversation could be about the obvious, which is this Challenger crash, right? And maybe what I'm most interested in is how the significance of how it's covered in the media, given its juxtaposition with the attack on Iraq. And I wonder if you have any thoughts of the importance of the way that Challenger crash has been covered.
Now, isn't it interesting you call it the Challenger, which what happened in 86?
Yes.
So I think it's called the Columbia.
The Columbia, that's right.
But for you, for everybody, it's a replay of that.
Yeah.
So it is the Challenger.
Mm-hmm.
But the main point I would make is that the coverage, the instant megalomaniac million trillion people voice coverage of a thing kills the event.
Yeah.
The event is gone. It disappeared. It's like a black hole of coverage that just sucks the event in and disappears it. And so the real secret of responding to this event is to realize it disappeared and that the media is a distortion within itself, about itself, and has nothing to do with the event, and no determination of what happened, what the effects of it can be determined. The media has canceled that out, and therefore that was yesterday, and we'll have to see what happens today. There's nothing to say about the event. It doesn't exist anymore. It probably never did exist.
Hmm. So would you say that's the same for this 9/11?
Yes.
Yeah?
Coverage. We live in a post-information society. And by information, in the sense I'm using it here, is that like, I mean the matching. Okay, this is pass the butter. Okay, that's the yellow dish over there. I pass it to someone else. Information is being exchanged. A matching, a congruency, you could say, a truth, a practicality has been achieved, right? That kind of meaning for information disappeared 100 years ago. And as a matter of fact, what we have now is we have the Android meme replaying the stages of history that humans went through up till 1960. So for the last 30 or more years, technology came alive and is replaying the stages of information transfer that we went through over the last 200 years. So we're at the point now where the Android meme has equaled the position we were in the 50s when there was no more possibility of connecting in an information environment, in the sense I meant of passing the butter. So we not only are living in a post-information environment, the Android meme has actualized the post-information environment. Now, what is it that we're experiencing then, right?
Hmm.
It's not information. It is informing. It's forming us. So you were formed by that event yesterday, as much as you allowed yourself to be. The one advantage of the last 30 years is that we do not have to respond to the informing, molding environment because technology is more and more disconnecting us from that on a mass level with the answer machine, the Walkman, the voicemail, the VCR. All these things give us autonomy, especially with the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
So we are only half informed now on what the Android meme is doing while it informs its parts, its five parts. That is the situation we're in. And so where are women and men today? Today, February 2nd.
Yeah.
After I say this. You see what I'm saying? Now, that's what I say about all that, but I'm interested in what you, I'm assuming, are at least feigning an interest in this event. And what do you think is happening? And then I'll bounce off within that,
the
proviso that none of this happened, nothing will happen, and it's not relevant to February 2nd, other than to the point you want to talk about it. So what do you say about it?
Well,
what do you have to say?
About the Columbia event? Well, I mean, obviously I think that the media or the electronic transfer of the information about this crash, right, is enough to take away any real sense of horror that would have, you know,
exactly.
These four, these 8-7 bodies explode above the sky and land in an 800-kilometer space, right? That is sort of presupposed by guys calling into the CBC saying, yeah, I found a piece of metal on the lawn, you know. All these voices obscure the actual event, obviously, right? And I think the same thing happened with September 11th.
Yeah.
And I think that people, because they're constantly inundated with the superfluous information that surrounds them, they can't actually form any sort of response or understanding of the real event. Right?
On a human scale.
Yeah.
No, I couldn't have said it better. You replay what I meant.
Yeah.
What I said 5 minutes ago is that they're those that are involved in the media coverage, and that's all of us, yet at the same time, the millions of us are ignoring it, which is a wise position. But
mm-hmm.
overall, it's from the media's perspective and reality, they are involved in the tragedy more than the 7 people and the relatives. The
yep.
puny 7 people, the puny relatives who are directly affected by this on the personal human emotion level, they are long lost, aren't they?
Yeah.
Long gone. So that well, then you understand what's happening here.
Yeah, well, and I mean, I guess my interest in that event is more of an interest in the whole meaning of the media coverage of the attack on Iraq and
yeah.
just what is the significance of putting so much focus on this Challenger explosion when we're, you know, supposedly about to all mount a war on Iraq, and how does that help or hinder our ability to understand these things? I think it's quite convenient, I guess, that we can put focus on that event and fail to get any real information. I was just watching a movie that a woman had made when she went back to visit her family in Iraq, and there was some real information in that film, right? Things that people don't really have an opportunity to see, children dying of malnutrition or all kinds of cancer and things like that happening in Iraq, that we, you know, it does inform you of a human tragedy. So I guess on the one hand, I do agree that events don't happen once they start happening in the media, but what about events that are taking place in non-mainstream media? How does non-mainstream media interact with the explosion of the Columbia, you know?
Okay, so I laid out that we have 5 bodies, and the media, there's different kinds of media bodies.
Okay.
First of all, we have the physical body, which is what you see and what you're identifying with in that alternative movie, which shows actual human beings suffering physical responses from 1991.
Yeah.
That is one part of ourselves. And then we have the TV screen body and the screen and other media. It is what we can see and interact with. We'll call that the screen body. Then we have the chip body, which is the invisible networks that we call the internet and cell phones and that are orbiting the economy, $1 trillion plus around every day, 24 hours. That bit of information, that's affecting the screen body and the physical body.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have an astral body, which is our spiritual body, which is something more than the physical body. So you get those 4 bodies, and they all come together to make a 5th mystery body. But let's just go back. I always apply any issue on the level we're talking about. If I saw that movie that you're talking about, that documentary on the Iraqis, I'd say, okay, this is the physical body, and it is being reported in a slow-moving documentary.
Yeah.
Something that takes 2 hours or whatever and focused on a bunch of people. Now, that is what was available 100 years ago
mm-hmm.
when they brought out movies that can focus on people. But what people missed, humans in all cultures missed, is that the larger effect of that movie medium, when Cecil B. DeMille and the earlier people, the Lumiere brothers, they invented this technology. They had no inkling, and they did not warn the citizens, just as Bill Gates did not warn us when he started bringing out the computers in the 80s, that this would wreck everything you ever knew on a human scale, would wreck all previous media, which already had previously wrecked your physical body. All this devastation was not forestated before the product came out. So with that media vortex hurricane going on all the time, the interaction between the media, the screen body, the chip body, the physical body, and the astral spiritual body, when you talk about the human scale, That's only one-fifth of us, because those Iraqi women or families, they listen to the radio. They watch whatever media they get a chance to engage in. And they're maybe not on the Internet, but they're several phases back, but they're still using electronic media, and all users of this deserve the fate that we get. We are oblivious and ignoring and not complaining about the media reality we are making. So we're all guilty of this situation. Now, I'm not necessarily going to put us down for being guilty, because that becomes a religious, metaphysical question whether we have guilt. If one accepts the fact humans are, quote, anarchistic, violent by nature, and it's not a problem for you, and it may not be for me, then that's just the fact of our reality. But you're putting on a concern here. You're saying, let's be concerned about these people. Now, when the Iraqi... whether the space shuttle has something to do with the non-event that's coming up with the Iraqi war, and when I say non-event, it's going to happen in the warmer, maybe April, May, June. That's how I see it from my information source.
Yep.
It'll happen during warm weather when the Iraqis don't expect
between
it, because
March
the myth is you
June,
can't attack in the hot weather.
Yep.
So that's when they'll really attack, and I don't know if Bush would really, everybody thinks it's going to happen in February. It may happen in February, but on the normal strategic way, it would not happen if everybody, because everybody expects it. So there's always a level of unexpectedness in this global theater, so that the managers of the global theater work with that. So nobody expected a space shuttle to collapse and interrupt this whole momentum up to the Iraqi war.
Yeah.
All right? So if it is part of a staged event to create an effect that leads to the proper timing of the Iraqi war, that may be what's going on, but that's all within the screen body, us registering the effect, thinking, is it related to the Iraqi effect that's coming down the pike? We have to remember that when the Iraqi effect happens, it's going to be given to us through the chip body, the screen body, the spiritual body, and the physical body. It'll be such a mishmash, and overall, you maybe have 500,000 people dead, but they will be puny compared to the 6 billion souls that will be eating up the imagery in various degrees of sophistication and just vampiring on it.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, pouring out disgust of what had happened, but the corruption in the 6 billion souls is probably worse, because they've got to stay alive and live with it compared to those who had the fortune of dying.
Yeah. So, I mean, that goes on all the time with all kinds of events,
yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, everything from the fire down the road
to the Rwandi massacres in 94.
Exactly. So, I mean, is there a way that humans can recover a sense of connection?
To what?
To each other, because they're being interfered with constantly by this electronic media. Like, can we move back to a time where we connect with each other? Is that time gone with the invention of the printing press? And people said the same thing about the printing press,
right?
Once we have books, then we won't talk to each other anymore, right?
And they said it about Jesus and the early cult of Christians.
Yeah.
So the thing is it a problem if humans don't connect? What are you suffering right now that you think needs to be filled in? Because that could be based on your astrological sign, could be based on your childhood programming. We're all so different.
Yeah.
You know, so I never know, unless I was being paid, whether to take those questions seriously, but I'm going to try to take them seriously. In the sense that we'd have to establish what you mean by connecting, because obviously there have been no... I'd say that's your physical body speaking.
Yeah.
But I bet you need the TV body. You even need this telephone to do this conversation.
Well, exactly.
So
right. And
we're
complicit
involved in these other bodies that I think the best way to deal with all these problems is to start demanding that the public discussion be in these terms. Not that I would hijack that conversation, but at least it's an accurate way of describing what we're doing, and then the person can think more clearly about what their questions are.
So you would say you need to frame your questions always within what realm of the media it's taking place?
In what realm of the five bodies?
The five bodies it's taking
so
place.
So if you ask when I have to determine which body is asking me the question about, Bob, how do I connect? Is it the screen body who's nostalgic for the print body, who likes to have a chance to talk about books, which they might have had in high school or something with some friends or in college or wherever?
No, I think it's more broad than that. I think what I'm asking is, how do the 6 billion souls manage to connect with each other given these other realms.
The astral body says we're always connected, all 6 billion of us. So there is a logic, a order being worked out among humans, already predestined. That's called the Akashic Records. That's what the spiritual astral body would say on this matter.
Yeah.
But the physical body says, well, I'm not living on the spiritual level. I've got to eat and survive. The TV body would say, well, I might be able to sacrifice some TV. I'll turn it off for a while, and then I'll focus on the physical, or I might just stay on the chip body. So you get an argument among yourselves already, and I call that not schizophrenia, which is just the normal physical body's doubleness that always happens in the mind. But when the Android meme and technology simulates that doubleness with the chip body and the screen body, then we all have 4 bodies, so we're quadro. So we're quadriphenic. So this obsolesces all the psychoanalysis and all the therapeutic doctrines that go on in the hospitals, including the pharmaceutical. I mean, the devastation in the effects of pharmacies, which are the most prominent stores on your neighborhood, these drug stores, the war they're doing on the physical body and allowing you to keep functioning so you can keep the chip and TV body going are puny. I mean, are make the Iraqi devastation puny.
Yeah.
Okay, so now back to your point. You want to get connected. Are you married, involved personally?
Yeah.
You're getting laid?
Yeah.
All right, so you're okay there. Do you want to get laid with more people?
No.
All right, so you don't mean that kind of connection?
No.
So what kind of connection do you mean?
Well, I guess I mean the kind of connection that comes from being able to see what the mainstream message in the media is and digesting it in a way that allows you to physically manifest a better world, you know?
So this is the TV body speaking.
Yeah.
Because you're saying, I need a way of having pattern recognition in relation to the TV body.
I need to be able to see through it in a certain sense. I need to be able to explain how to see through it to other people.
Do you have children?
No, but I work with a group of youth, and I guess we're doing a presentation, and our theme is actually sort of children around the world and how does the media portray them and what's really going on.
Right. So you're addressing practically this environment we live in to little physical bodies.
Yeah.
Who are just being implanted with the TV and chip body and aren't asked to focus too much on it at this point.
Yeah.
It's growing in them. It's influencing them. So, yeah, that's a real problem. What do you tell these kids? Well, I think that the kids could be told about these bodies.
Yeah.
Because they're going to live longer and deal with this. So if no one told you this when you were 8 or 5. So, yeah, I say tell them this. Now, they also want to know what's happening in the news events and how it'll affect their physical body. Are we going to be bombed and all this kind of stuff? Who's going to war and why? That becomes a political question, a political point, because are you in an administered school or group?
Well, I mean, part of the Unitarian congregation, right? So you can, to a certain degree, administered, yeah.
But is there limits to what you tell the kids, and are you monitored and policed on that?
Not like in a public school.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So you could tell them this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know what it would be like if kids were brought up looking at the media as something that's not external and entertainment, but inside them.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what kids would do with that kind of information. Now, kids are perverse, and they always are going to create a new direction that their parents didn't go. So they might turn and use it in a way I don't foresee. But definitely, that's something that should be told to kids. I mean, I've always offered to speak to kids in schools and that about this.
Yeah.
What's interesting is the main person who publicized this, McLuhan, when he did this in the 50s, 60s, he became infamous, notorious, ostracized.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't allowed to. So when you ask for humans to ask to get connected and maybe state clearly what the situation is, you're up against other people who don't want to, who don't think they need that and want to exploit ignorance.
Well, exactly, right? And that's, I think, for a lot of people, the crux of what's happening with the American state right now. You know, you just can't, you can't remove yourself from being part of the media without getting to a point where you'd be totally ostracized from society, because you have to bring everything into question, everything they do or say. I mean, you can't listen to George Bush and take anything he says as truth, right? It's just things he's saying to, you know, justify his regime. So
yeah, but the thing is that you're looking at him maybe as the top of an ordered hierarchy.
Oh, I don't think he's the top of any hierarchy. I mean, I know he's challenged by reading clearly what's on his teleprompter, so he's obviously not making any huge policy decisions, right?
Right. So we shouldn't worry about him. He's just like the average citizen.
Yeah.
He's following orders. So where are the orders coming from? That's a big issue. Now, Sleeper is part of a show that looks at the order being structured by a few individuals who are hidden.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that a limited way to look at the situation, because I think the 6 billion, or especially in the West, in North America, we're organizing our order by the technology and media we use. So we're responsible. And so the news broadcasters, the Pamela Wallens and the Peter Mansbridge, are really irresponsible when they put out a news item, then they bring in commentary, or then they say these humans are responsible, to focus on one figure and not point out that we are all just quarks and atomic particles in relation to this huge black hole of media coverage, is silly. To actually say, well, this person, the minister of so-and-so, is responsible, and the politicians and ministers know that they're not responsible, and they can be cynical and be corrupt and have scandals as a distraction.
Yeah.
We have to... This is how we could reconnect. If we all collectively admitted that we're doing this to ourselves, not George Bush or anything, and then we'd have to recognize that we couldn't do anything on a mass scale. You can't project out and tell all these millions of people how to live.
Yeah.
So the only thing is we have to become like yogis, or we have to become disciplined in perception, which traditionally was the role of the artist. But art is silly now. It's so puny, those old artifacts, that we all are in the position of the artist. We don't have to rely on art, but we can rely on instant perception of what's happening. So we now can use speech accurately to transcend cultural barriers in different languages. We can use English, which is used all over the world, and use it not to promote English, but just as the mathematics of words that say precisely where we're at.
Yeah.
Now, then everybody reacts to that, and we'll find the reactions are what everybody's already doing now. In all the different ways. There'll be people who will organize food drops in different places. There'll be others who will leave their homes and become business people. The others will go back to school. Some will drop out. Some will say the heck with it and just watch football games. It's already being done anyway. So there's a great ecology in human behavior. So then you could say, oh, okay, let's laugh. And you just pick up a New Yorker magazine. There's all the cartoons there for you, really intelligent cartoons that give you views. So I am suspect of your concern. When you use the word truth, that doesn't refer to anything. Have you ever heard of Jean Baudrillard?
No.
He's considered a postmodernist thinker. I find his writings are really good in showing you, he uses McLuhan's knowledge to show how the word truth and what we think is truth is so media dependent and dependent on older media that it is really hypocritical to demand the truth. like Sleeper's website says, you know, we give the truth. That's a lie. And even a lie is not possible, because that's dialectic with truth. We have to realize that a speech and these old media and old concepts have nothing to do with where we're at. We are in a heaven now. We have died and gone to heaven. You ever thought of that? What if humanity's already been killed? How do we know what collective mass death is? We may have already gone that way when the television and satellite environment came in the 50s and 60s. Okay, so if you spoke to God, if you actually met something that claimed you were God and you were in heaven and you would say the truth, do you think that he could say the truth to you? Would he say, like in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? Well, the answer is 42.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm still stuck on this. You know, there's got to be an action that...
that's a gesture.
Of these interpretations.
Say that sentence again. I'm sorry to interrupt it, but yeah, action, which includes basic human gestures. There has to be a gesture that what?
That then informs all these different levels of media, right? There's got to be an original action. I'm still pretty convinced on that. You know, I'm not going to give up the idea of there's an original action that then gets interpreted and misinterpreted through signs and signifiers and whatever's going on in various communications. I still, you know, think that there is some level of truth. It might not be possible to get to the ultimate truth, or, you know, this is exactly what happens, but there are things that are closer to the original gesture, and there are interpretations that are further. And I think it's important to train ourselves to be able to perceive which is which.
Okay, there may have been an original gesture. Maybe that's what the Holy Communion is. The sharing of food is probably one of the earliest human interactions, so therefore archetypal. So the Christian religion founded on that ancient original communion is pretty interesting. The Nazarene organized that as an archetypal thing. I would add to that our media is new food. So we have to include the media consumption as part of the sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if there is cloning, a lot of Baudrillard's point is, once you clone something and then you make further copies from the clone, then you've lost the original. So I don't know if you've heard of this argument that when you're asking for an original action, that's called essentialism, and that we're in this media-confused situation that we can't find and claim what is originary anymore. Now, putting that aside, let's try to figure out if it's possible to make an to find the original action. I would say breathing together, eating together, and kindness, what we call love, is obviously the most powerful originary action, and that does carry on all the time anyways.
Yeah.
What the problem is if you did find it, just like when the Pons and Fleischmann discovered cold fusion, they then blasted out the announcement on the Internet, and it became confused and muddled and disappeared in the communication response. If you found it, how would you communicate it, and would you bother? Would you just be happy enough for yourself knowing what it is?
Well, I mean, once you communicate it, then it's no longer the original gesture. Then it's going through these realms of interpretation.
Right.
But I guess if you found something that you yourself were convinced was the truth, and you thought it would be beneficial to share, then I think you're obligated to go forth and explain to people, I'm using media to explain to you that here's an original action, right? So I think if Sleeper wants to make a website and try and discover the truth about whatever it is he's looking at, then that's a valuable, to a certain extent, that's a valuable activity.
Yeah, that's a probe.
Yeah.
Now, I would say the originary thing in all our cases is our name.
Yeah.
That's the first communication given to you, and you're not aware of it. Your physical body's not aware of it until you grow a bit and then become aware of your name. But if you believe in the astral spiritual body, you may have come in with the intention, reincarnated, to get that name, and that name is very important.
Mm-hmm.
So one would begin with the originary action gesture is, what does my name mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And so then when someone asks you what do you have to say, you would explain what your name is and how it came about. Now, imagine doing that in the middle of a talk show on Oprah or something, you'd be laughed at.
Yeah.
So, obviously, we will continue trying to create means to communicate. And we don't know the effects of these communications. So the postmodernists are wrong when they knock out truth and beat up the word truth. Now, that they're valid to make that point.
Yeah,
but that
you can't
point
say that there's absolute truth in
take
the world
pardon?
Of... You can't say that there's absolute truth in the world of communication, because of this whole issue of the sign and the signifier, right?
Like, right, which begins with speech. So it's not just, we don't want to just think in terms of the screen body or the chip body. It goes back to the physical body and speech, too.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
It's always been a problem.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. They say in the Bible that the angels couldn't confer language on the first humans. The humans were the only ones who could invent language. So communication is, and all the technologies from speech on that are communicatory, communicational, say, they are the essence of humans' inventions. That's what we add to this world we live in.
And with the extrapolation of this inability of the angels being able to give the power of of speech, be that angels could not speak a lie.
Right.
That, yeah, that's what the interpretation of that is.
You've heard of that story?
No, I'm just reasoning that out for myself.
It makes this dimension unique.
Yeah. Yeah, so the dimension in which non-truth is essential, I guess, right?
Right. Now, the issue, though, really, if we really look at how we've come to this communicatory disaster, anarchy, utopia, oblivion, that is really what our problem is. And and any disasters they feature on the media's content are puny.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, natural earthquakes, and that can be the actual physical world, the first nature that we came into. It's rebelling against the second nature that humans have created and the effects of that. So we really got to admit and be strong in asserting, even to kids, how terrible the situation is now.
Yeah.
Now then, what are we going to do to get them to keep the energy going? I think you find that happens naturally. People still, nobody, no death, no, as Dylan said, no death stopped the world. Well, no, maybe collective mass death has stopped the world. So that's why we can even consider that we're in heaven. If we realize how bad it's gotten in terms of communication and establishing anything, because you couldn't, no scientist, no anybody can stop the world. This is what disappointed Trudeau. I mean, you could see it in Trudeau from the 80s and 90s when he quit. He just looked apathetic, passive. He didn't respond to the world anymore because his whole effort that he thought he was doing in the 60s just disappeared. And then he had to put up with these crooks that took over and disappeared Canada. But they were just riding, the Mulroneys were just riding on the fact Canada had already disappeared.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. There's this great movie made by Robert Frank, this photographer, made in Cape Breton, where it's all about this king, this guy, he's a bum in a shack, but he has some people down the hill digging on a beach. So he's supposedly the George Bush, the hierarchy organizer. What does he do every day? In the morning, they wait for his word, and his word is based on, he turns on this transistor radio, and when the static comes on, and, it indicates that the electronic transmission is happening, he says, nope, no news today. We don't even get any news. He doesn't even get any content. He just turns on, and he sees that the electric environment is still going, and that's the big news, that it hadn't been turned off. So since that would be the big news, that it was turned off, he always has to tell them to resume digging because there's no news.
Well, you'd be surprised to know that my father grew up in Atikokan, which is a town really far up north in Ontario. And the first time television came to their community, all they got was static. But they would have mass gatherings of people to watch the static. You know, like, it's on. The television is here. It's all static. So
that's tremendous.
Mean,
now, that would be, if McLuhan knew that story, that's a very important story. So it's good to have it here at the First Institute, because that shows you that the electric environment is like breathing. It's like nature. It's like oxygen. It doesn't even matter if there's content. The fact that you can feel the electricity in the static, or just that you can tap into some new space which the electric environment creates, is the reason of our addiction.
Yeah.
So that story. So when you heard that as a kid, you laughed, right?
Yeah. Well, you sort of went, okay, those Northerners, nothing to do.
It's like those papers, right? Those newbies.
Yeah, exactly.
But had you ever thought of it in terms of the dramatic meaning of that instance?
Well, I mean, yeah, you have to think about how important it is for them to feel connected to the rest of...
Yeah, feel connected, to feel part of the communion of the second food, which is our media.
Yeah.
There's the Christian point. And so that's why sometimes you can look at these, this is a blasphemy, this is the second food, it's like icons, it's like the golden calf that Moses beat up.
Yeah.
You know, we're redoing the Moses and all the ancient tribal sins of worshiping idols. Our second nature that we're making, which is our province to do, we don't have any ecology about it.
Yeah.
And so we're worshiping these icons.
So, do you recommend them? Yeah. Sure, no problem.
Is Sleeper saying something?
He's got to change the battery on the phone here. It's making angry
creepy
noises.
Okay, so you were starting to say something at a different level, I think.
Oh, I was going to ask, is the best thing people can do to reestablish themselves in the physical body to go on media fasts, right? Should you try and put yourself on a media fast? Is that a worthwhile endeavor?
In the 80s, I would say yes. Mm-hmm. I would say you could turn off TV. Now, what's interesting is that people are now psychologically, collectively, in a media fast in terms of the capabilities the chip body can do for the screen body. The screen body was the environment in the 50s and 60s and in the 70s, but as the digital world took over in the 80s and 90s and the growing of the chip body, that caused a crisis in the screen body. It wasn't as prominent. It wasn't the main food that people were eating. So in the 90s, you had an amazing fast from the screen body enabled by the chip body, right?
Yeah.
Now, I'm complexifying your question to show you the factors involved. It isn't that complex to me, as I say, because I've thought it through and said it many times, but maybe just for you or anybody listening. But you see what I'm saying. To ask of a media fast, the chip body, you're not using my terms immediately.
All right.
And you could use them because you could say, Bob, this is the screen. Can the chip body do a fast from the screen body? And can the physical body do a fast from both of those? That's mm-hmm. how you would properly
yeah,
ask the
that's
question.
That's what I want to know, right? Can the physical body go on a fast from the screen body and the chip body, right?
Right.
And, I mean, what does that mean for its connection to the astral body?
Right. First off, if everybody went on a physical fast, their physical bodies disconnected
yep.
from these media bodies, then we'd be back 200 years
mm-hmm.
ago. And then that would have all kinds of problems, so we couldn't do that collectively. But personally, you could do it. You just don't use the media if it doesn't affect your livelihood.
Yep.
If it does, then you'd quit and get a job where you're disconnected. Go to Bermuda or go to another country that's less technologized in our terms and work there and make money. So there's all kinds of strategies one could do. Whether it accomplishes anything in terms of an improved scenario, that's debatable. So, let's see, what other ways to look at this point? Could the physical body... Now, let's not just think of media in terms of TV and chip body. For the physical body, I actually have a different term for the physical body. I call it the neuron body,
mm-hmm.
which is the body of chemistry.
Okay.
That science tells you from the 19th and 20th century we're made up of. And the main media of consumption for that is drugs, pharmaceuticals, vitamins, recreational drugs.
So what you're telling me now
okay,
is
just
that...
Okay, to finish, so the physical
yeah.
body then becomes... I just didn't want at the beginning to go into all this
yep.
to stop the momentum. So I'm just correcting the terms now. The physical body is actually the fifth body, the mystery body, because it's made up of all these factors, the neuron, the spiritual, the TV, and the chip. So can that respond to all this is one way to do it. So I'm saying the physical body, the neuron body, it has to go on a fast from taking orders from its doctor, which tells it to do this and that for aches and pains.
Mm-hmm.
So let's think. Remember, media is not just mind communication. It's physical communication. So, okay, now state the question.
Well, I think the question... I mean, I don't know. Does someone have to go on a fast from the neuron level in order to reconnect with their physical self? I would.
The physical self
body?
is the total of what
is the total of
what we are,
neurons.
And with the mystery body, we don't know what it is. So we can go back with that in mind to just calling the neuron body the physical body, which is what people understand. It's the thing
yeah.
that has to be fed and has aches and pains and pleasures. You're asking, can that body get out of the other matrix?
Well, I guess you answered my question, because I was trying to find out if trying to remove yourself from the screen body and the chip body has any positive impact on the physical body and the astral body. And I think you're saying that no, that the key is to understand how these things are, or try and understand for yourself how these things interact.
Right, and how to express it.
Yeah, and how to express it, and how to, I guess, how that factors into your ability to process things.
Right.
So I was at a talk this morning by Rick Salutin, who's a columnist in the Globe and Mail.
I know Rick.
Right?
I was on a panel with him about 11 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, McLuhan was featured on TV Ontario the 1st of November, and he's never liked McLuhan that much, and
no.
did an article in the Globe and Mail to knock McLuhan, and he went through the usual cliches. So I've actually had, within the context of our discussion here, a communication from him. Well, someone sent me that. So I'd be interested, yeah. What did he have to say?
Well, what did he have to say? He was interesting because he was talking about Innes, right?
Yes.
And Innes's idea that media and the consumers are running along in the same track, and their communication is sort of contingent upon whatever electronic track they're running in, right?
Okay, let's go back. The media and consumers, is he making a difference? I'm not sure what
yeah,
that means.
Innes is saying that, you know, you can't, just as you said, you can't blame the media for the outcome. You have to look at the people who,
the people's actions themselves.
Yeah, the people are part of the whole act of communication.
Right. I would agree with that.
Which we understand, right? But what was Rick Salutin saying? Rick Salutin was talking about why does the media cling to these horrible tragedies like 9/11 and sort of what does that mean for us. And I guess somebody asked a question about McLuhan, and he then said, you know, I'm not a big fan of McLuhan. So, but it was interesting because he was talking about the loss of the ability for media players in the physical body to directly interact when we have the screen body and the chip body.
Yeah, he didn't use those
and
terms. But
he didn't use it, but I'm just putting it into the context of our conversation, right? He's like, people can't interact and because of the media, right?
Right. Now, he was complaining about that, and he was saying the same problem that we started off with,
yeah.
and we're all dealing with, we all have the same problem. How do we communicate in
mm-hmm.
this noise?
Yeah,
and,
but the interesting thing was...
But I just want to say, Susan,
oh, sorry. Yeah.
I think you're seeing that what I am saying, my terms of definition, could have been used by him to spell out better what he was trying to complain about.
Well, I found it interesting that he had... His presentation was not particularly insightful. It was insightful, but it was hard to follow because while he was lamenting the loss of the interaction of two physical bodies or a number of physical bodies as the main means of spreading information,
right,
his ability to handle the question period or communicate directly was not as good as it is in print, right?
That's right.
So I just found it to be a very interesting and sort of, I guess,
I think it's a perfect
situation.
It was great that you went there because that's a perfect lab specimen brought to me, the head doctor here, to show you the inadequacy, the pollution within that specimen.
Yeah.
And I'm talking technically. I'm not judging his character. But it's, again, someone who writes for a newspaper, an ancient medium, and the newspaper would be nostalgic for human, for physical interaction, neuron-body interaction, because it comes from that period 200 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's complaining about the later media.
Yeah.
The Peter Mansbridge, who from his point of view are even more removed than he is.
Yeah.
And I mean, people can sit and look at this guy and concentrate on his column for all hours of the day, whereas on TV and the chip is just a passing 60-second item,
yeah.
2-second item.
Well,
he's complaining it. But what is the problem is that he's within the media environment, he's keeping it going, and he refuses to look at the heir of McLuhan, me, who would define the situation, and therefore give better audiences answers to the audience. So in other words, they should have had it that thing. Rick lay out his problem, then I answer the questions.
Yeah.
I mean, because I'm clarifying what you were looking for, you got more today than from him. Now look at all the personal, sociological, mediological reasons why that couldn't happen. But what is happening, though, is that we can do this now, tape it and put it on the internet, and it would last longer than that encounter this morning.
Yeah.
So it works.
And I guess the point for him is interaction, right? And so there was
the physical body. He has a nostalgia for the physical body.
Yeah, and I mean, somebody did bring up the idea of the chip body being the next level of interaction. So
right.
recovering some level of that interaction on the physical body on the chip in the chip body.
Yeah, because
right?
it gets the kids are into this. They do
yeah.
instant messaging constantly. You walk down the street here in New York, they're always on the phone as they walk down the street with their buddies.
Yeah.
So they're
now,
always
his
including
response
them.
To that.
And so every new medium, every new language has some services.
Yeah. Well, his response to that was that he felt that person-to-person interaction, such as nodding your head at somebody on the street, has more depth than interaction that takes place over the internet.
Now, that's why I titled my book Phatic Communion.
Mm.
He's talking about phatic communication.
Yeah.
P-H-A-T-I-C in linguistics. Mm-hmm. That's the term for what he's referring to. And so he is now archetypalizing, putting great values into the phatic action and gesture, which is what I satirized with the title of my book done 11 years ago. So
yeah.
that's really interesting that he said that.
Mm-hmm.
McLuhan used to have a great joke. I don't know where it came from, but somebody apparently would say, how's it go? I love the way he nods. He really communicates.
Exactly what he was saying this morning. I mean, I've just got to, I ate a really hot sandwich on my way here, so I've just got to take a quick break and
okay,
and
we can wait.
Yep, okay.
Hey.
Matt.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can talk for a minute while
sure.
we're waiting.
Yeah.
Are you enjoying what's going on the
yeah.
Cloak and Dagger?
Oh. Well, no, the site's kind of lame. I don't know.
No, I mean our chat form.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
Yeah, it's total anarchy now.
It yeah, it's that. it really is.
Do you really? Yeah, it's funny. I mean.
But you see, it absorbs my time beyond reading.
Yeah, it's taking away from getting my stuff up there.
Reading or participating. So that's why I think of it as annoyance.
Yeah, because you actually have to deal with it.
Yeah, I try to avoid it, but I get sucked in every couple of days. I usually end up going and seeing what's there.
It's like oxygen. You got to breathe it.
No, I was completely unhooked until some of those threads we talked about last week, you know.
Right, started happening.
That was entertaining.
The thing is, can you get Christine to read the literate ascetic cliche probes at work?
Yeah, no, we'll get that going.
Because I'm getting more and more people, it's coming around, they say, Bob, obviously you have some stuff to add to all this. Do you write on all these other schools of McLuhan? I said, yeah, it's up there. They want to read it. So I'm just reasserting, at least we can someday get that up there.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering if Christine could do it at work, or is she too busy doing other stuff?
Well, we are a bit busy, but we'll get on it.
Yeah.
It'll
is there anything you want to say about interactions that you're having the past week, or any interesting stories?
Well, Susan's back, so do you want to go back to that?
Yeah, okay.
Then we can
all right.
go on at length after.
So this is a good talk with Susan.
Yes, it is.
It's following logically from what we've done in the previous sessions.
Yeah, it's bang on. We're up. We're definitely out of the basics now.
Yeah.
Okay, here she is.
All right. So
did
right
you
way?
Get a chance to say to Rick or to anybody your slight grievance about what happened?
Oh, well, right after that, they showed this movie on Iraq, right? So
oh, that's where you saw it.
Yeah, it was just a 1, 2, 3 kind of thing, and I was running around. We were talking to the youth about what was their theme going to be, and so they were choosing media and children around the world, right?
Right.
And so there were a lot of things happening. So I didn't really say anything to Rick Salutin particularly. I just sort of noted the irony of his difficulty in communicating in speech, his lament that it doesn't happen anymore, and then his dismissal of sort of any kind of interactive discussion that's happening on the chip level. I just noted those things.
Well, it's a
okay,
blanket.
Thanks.
It's a blanket Puritanism in relation to what's going on. It's what he's somebody, what McLuhan called a P.O.B., is a print-oriented bastard.
Yeah.
P.O.B., he's 19th century, he represents the medium of the 19th century print, and he has his gig in the Globe and Mail, and people get paid to be stupid. to be incomplete, to be not perceptive. Mm-hmm. I just saw an interesting movie Jean-Luc Godard did on himself, done in 94, JLG/JLG. Mm-hmm. And he says to his maid, are you courageous? And the maid says, yes. And he says, well, then you'll end up on welfare. And if you're courageous, the society can't use you. If you try to use perception in this situation, at least this couldn't.
Yeah.
So Rick is not being courageous, and he's gotten dumb and dulled, and even people who interact with more modern media and more savvy than he is, just because they are forced to, like yourself, can see the inadequacy. But he probably gets a good salary writing that article.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He's really writing for a niche market of, I don't know, 60-year-olds or something who have the same biases as him. And that's another factor that's obvious in communication environment. Since the 70s, there's been so much niche marketing.
Yeah.
So everybody can live in their own solipsistic bubble, either tribal, meme-wise, or individually.
Yeah.
So
well, you certainly
there's
see
no
that
way. Oh, go ahead. But
I was going to say, you certainly see that division or the stratification of different communication groups when you look at the magazine rack, right? You've
yes.
got a magazine for every particular little subculture, you know, and just allows them to not sort of have an overall perspective of what's in the media.
Right, right? And that is gravitating toward, in about 50 years, children will be raised inside a media tube. They'll have bodies, but they will have some kind of chip or some kind of apparatus in their brains or in their perceptive organs, like a condom over their brain. And they will have a whole life that they think they're experiencing as a young person, have a girlfriend, studying school, have a boyfriend, and whatever, maybe have a lesbian relationship, a gay relationship, whatever the society tolerates within the group that's doing that. And they will have this whole life, and they won't realize they haven't even begun to have their physical body life yet.
What would the point of such a life be?
What would the point be?
Yeah, like what would the situation be that brings people to experience that rather than life.
Yeah, to accept that.
Yeah, to accept that rather than life in the physical realm, I guess.
I'd say the point is that our media is physical. It's like breathing. We live to experience. You wake up every day to experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the main factor. It's just to experience the sensory input.
Yeah.
When as the societies mutate and realize media are sensory input and not as suspect and considered artificial, like Rick Salutin is highly evaluating the verbal interaction,
yeah.
And that's so puny compared to the new media. As each generation goes further in accepting the media clothing they'll wear, it will get to that point, but it's understandable.
So my sort of sense of horror, like, ooh, people living in tubes might be, you know, sort of similar to somebody's idea. If somebody went back 20 years and said, you know, your kids are going to play hockey with things on a TV screen, they're no longer going to have friends they play outside with.
Right, that same grievance. Look at the movie The Matrix. It'll be interesting to see if the new Matrix, there's two of them coming out this year.
Yep.
You know the movie The
mm-hmm.
Matrix?
Yep.
It'll be interesting if they deal with this question, because the Neo character is rebelling. He represents this little
Yeah.
Warriors are rebelling against the virtual reality everybody's inside of.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it's not that bad.
Yeah.
So it could be an old-fashioned issue in the movies, maybe the directors and writers are aware of that. They're going to work with that dilemma in the next movies. But the thing is the fact that the simple way to say it is humans just want to experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so the point is experience. Now, one word doesn't say it all, but within the moment, I think you get what I'm saying. People just, their bodies want to experience. Their media bodies want to experience. So they'll do it because they want to experience.
Yeah.
And reality goes on regardless.
Mm-hmm.
We can't stop it.
No.
So what we do is provide content for the media diet. We don't keep the trees going yet.
Mm-hmm.
We may have to someday.
Yeah. Well.
But everybody, you just think how easy people's working lives are in the major cities. They just go and they sit in a computer, they process information and run around and maybe organize a press conference. Just think how ephemeral people's working lives, no hands getting dirty, no struggle. There are people building buildings and doing the railways and digging the ditches, but a lot of people are working, but they are doing a very ethereal fingertip kind of working. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they're just providing information for more and more media. This is the way life is in New York and in the bigger cities.
Well, I have the, I work at a food distribution warehouse, right? And so we're like the middleman, the middle media in food, if you will, right? We
right.
Get
is it for
in,
mainstream food or alternative?
Natural and organic.
Oh, do you know Perry did Lasku?
Yes, I do know Perry. He doesn't
well,
work
he
at the
did
co-op
interacted.
Anymore.
I knew him at CKLN. Now he's back involved with us a little bit.
Yeah.
But so now I know where you work.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, what were you going to say about it?
We're just fodder for the information mill about food, you know? We don't really do anything. We don't produce the food. Take it in and ship it out again. It could just go straight to the stores, right? And so I've been thinking that about my job, that it's sort of superfluous to
right,
act
but so
the
what,
physical act of eating, you know?
Yeah, but here's where Innes and McLuhan would come in. The media structure of our society has made that point, that holding station that you are necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it? Improve telephone networks and create the need for this? Like, what? I don't know if you were superfluous.
Why can't the food get right to the store from or right to the person's house, right?
Because you're dealing with a lot more people who buy that kind of food. It's a bigger market, so it has to be organized on a bigger scale, and it needs a drop-off point.
Yeah.
So improved communications, improved speed-up has led to your job.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's incredible. I mean, when you look at the economy, it works out to something like 1 in 4 people work in food or food-related jobs, right?
Right.
But most of these, like only 2-4% of the population actually grows the food. So there's the rest of us who are dealing with the transportation, the packaging, the processing,
the advertising,
the billing, the finances, the trucking. I mean, there's all these things that happen around food that are information, you know?
Right. In one way, what the news should emphasize is what's amazing is that all this transportation, growing and stuff,
mm-hmm.
you think of supposedly human nature's tendency to make mistakes, is that a lot, say 80% of it, gets out there and there's no accidents. That's what's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, about 90% of the stuff people order gets to them, right?
Yeah, the efficiency is amazing.
Yeah.
Now, apparently Soviet media was like that. You know, in the 50s, 60s, they would show the workers working. Look, we did this today. They would celebrate the efficiency.
Mm.
Well, and now it becomes a cultural point, McLuhan said, why we didn't do that.
Yeah.
But if the media in our culture started doing that, and some people, some idealists like Slootin might say, we need more celebration of the workers and this and that. They would say something within that meme, not those exact words.
Yeah.
More acknowledgement of the little guy who's holding everything together. Would the society want that too much as a covered item? No. But the news people could do it in their little 5-minute broadcasts.
Yeah.
It would be an experiment. CBC got to do that to raise the ratings. We're going to talk about the people and see if we can get away with it and aren't accused of being communists.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was this... I went to a media course by Johann Galtung, right, who's this peace philosopher and peace media journalist.
Yeah.
And so he was proposing that some of the journalists who came to this workshop get together and lobby the Toronto Star and the Globe and Mail to have a peace page in their paper so that daily they would report on peace news in the paper, which
right.
is, of course, totally contrary to what the paper is interested in, right?
And what is the paper interested in? It has to provide new content for the human's voracious need to experience.
Yeah.
That's what we're all up against.
Now, do you buy into Michael Moore's theory that he put forward in his last movie, which is American media, and probably to a certain extent we have to extend this to Canadian media because there's very little distinction there in some ways. We're feeding our appetite for fear and terror. That's what we're really most interested in.
Right. Do I agree with Michael?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would not put so much dramatic emphasis on those words because, again, he's only talking about the archetypal physical body needs.
Yep.
For an emotional range of spectrum from pleasure to pain and in the horrors and pleasures in between
mm-hmm.
and panics, we have media needs is feeding on itself. We have the Android meme. So again, I never agree with anybody because they always limit and simplify it.
Mm-hmm.
And what is really interesting is that Michael Moore and the alternative media have been absorbed for 20 years to meet the psycho profile of the part of the crowd that needs those kind of statements of meaning and purpose or criticism. When they experience those, they feel, oh, someone's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a whole marketing of that kind of counter attitude that's been going on and was, in a way, epitomized by the Seattle grunge in alternative music, the mass marketing of alternative. But it actually, the alternative began with the marketing of black people in the 20s with jazz.
Yeah.
So the Electric Vortex includes its opposition, and it gets more and more sophisticated as the decades pass. So if Michael Moore or anybody doesn't describe the context they're saying their criticism in, then it is limited, and I would put all kinds of negative terms on it. So I don't. There's no problem with the little puny idea he's putting out, but it's not good enough.
Yeah.
And it's amazing if we were forced. Let's say right now we're on whatever that CBC Sunday afternoon call-in national call-in show is.
Oh yeah, what is that?
You know what I mean.
Yeah, with Rex Murphy.
Right.
Yeah.
If we were the topic, you were the journalist and interviewing me.
Yeah.
And we forced everybody to listen to Bob and follow this thing on a mass level. Can you imagine the noise that would come out the next day? Well, this guy's a communist, an anarchist, he's a Nazi, he did this, he fucked five people while he was married. It's just the noise would happen.
Yeah.
So the thing is that, of course, my agenda would not have any blanket effect, but why can't we as a black market spread this idea around and bring it up in any context to criticize and assume that we already know these five terms of the language, you can start to spread the virus.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure why I veered off into that, but it was in response to Michael Moore.
Well, the
Moore.
Idea of Michael Moore's, and I thought it was an oversimplified...
Oh, yeah, that right. The fear,
you know,
thing?
Yeah.
I think it's the five bodies have fear. They have a range of experiences. It's not just fear. But the thing is, I think what he's pointing to is the voracious need to experience could be called fear, because when I wake up, if I can't breathe, I'm going to be really panicky.
Yeah.
And so if I can't consume experience, I get claustrophobic. So it is true, but you can't blame that. That's why humans experience.
Yeah, and he's trying to explain the American state from a condition that all people experience. Do you know what I'm saying here? All people go through fear and wanting to protect themselves and that sort of situation. So I don't know. I had a hard time grasping why it was so particular.
Right,
to
it's a cliche.
American. Yeah.
He's saying, you know, our problems all due to the fact we need to breathe.
Yeah.
That's how silly it is.
Yeah.
But you know what? That kind of statement can become a bestseller,
mm-hmm.
because every statement that we've had people say in back when there was the human scale, all those become archetypes. Then they become memes, and then they can be targeted in relation and juxtaposition with all the other crazy emotions and scenes and content that goes out. So everything gets retrieved. The cliches that he's saying becomes a bestseller.
Mm-hmm.
But it's totally understandable when you say, well, of course, people need books. What kind of content are you going to have in a book society this late when we had every kind of novel written? Okay, it has to get stupider or even more shocking. Someone says something so cliche that it seems new.
Yep.
So that's another effect that McLuhan talked about, is that our media utopia we're in retrieves and saves all previous expressions that either disappeared or had hegemony, but they all can get recycled. And the best book that shows this and predicted this was Finnegan's Wake. So take a look at Finnegan's Wake.
Okay.
That book shows you our society and the five bodies, and it shows you exactly the way we experience it all at once. All these things are going on right now while
That's
we're
by
talking.
James Joyce, right? Finnegan's Wake?
Yeah, Finnegan's Wake by James Joyce. Matt can show you.
Okay.
But the point is, you don't read it like a book. You don't read word, linear, left to right. He takes, in a way, an extreme collage and throws it all on in your face on one page.
Mm-hmm.
And then he repeats that for 627 more pages.
Yeah.
But when you begin to see that that's showing exactly what's thrown at our faces every day, then you begin to see this is more than a book. It's not written like a normal linear book.
Mm-hmm.
Then you begin to see all those books, the Margaret Atwoods and everybody that are writing stuff, Leonard Cohen's, whoever they are today, these authors are replaying a linear experience called a book for nostalgia. But the market can process so much wealth that all paths, all forms of communication now have a Baroque spiral of wealth generation. So you're in the area of doing with kids. This is a puny, tiny little fragment of activity compared to all the millions of other activities, which are equally puny, but there's room for you to do it. And so it has, this society is the most free, unbelievably democratic society in terms of human activities, compared to older societies, which were very tribal, very dictatorial in all levels of experience. The tremendous wealth we live in today, that's something that should be explained too by Peter Mansbridge.
Mm-hmm.
So the peace guys, the problem is hijacking a page for peace. You're taking one meme, which is so puny, because we have a greater peace going on every day done unconsciously, like you just expressed. Your company gets that food out to everybody. That generates peace.
Yeah.
If that was cut off, a lot of anxiety and anger would surface and violence. So we're all amazingly peaceful people. But to hoik up the image of peace is really limited. What would more help peace is a proper statement of what the problem is, and that's what I'm a genius at.
So, I mean, there's the idea of, you know, what is peace, but people's concept of what is peace being limited to not war, right?
Right.
Is for me a real problem.
Yeah, it's a limited view of peace. And on top of it, in our society, which is so democratic and allows everybody to experience as much as they want, even if they're on welfare, they can take in a lot of media.
Yeah.
They just have to listen to radio. They get all kinds of great radio all day long,
mm-hmm.
if they're not wanting to go on a media fast, which is very hard to do.
Yeah.
But to point out an image of peace and then to say that that must be dropped into everybody every day, like Chinese water torture, is really showing a naivety that hasn't even begun to understand the 20th century, let alone the 21st. And yet, there's a market for that guy and his group, because there are a lot of people who want to believe in that level of somnambulism.
Yeah.
So we have created so much democracy that the young kids, they wear stupid clothes, stupid-looking clothes, wear their baseball hats backwards, they look stupid. They know that stupidity is what's making this wealth and utopia today.
Yeah.
In terms of, we don't even need to know the impercipience of what we're saying and doing, because there'll be a market for it, and that makes more jobs. So you see that science and evolution and all these enlightenment ideas of the last 200 years, truth, progress, have been well achieved beyond what Voltaire or any of those philosophers in the 19th century, even Marx, even dreamed of. So to tell this to kids would inspire them. Might also threaten their identity. Because,
well, yeah, that's a big one, right? Like, you see,
it's like, my parents did it all, what's there left for me to do? Well, you tell them that, you got to keep this thing going and create more complexity. So you could answer it. But it's interesting, a kid can only take so much in. So then there's a great market for stupidity, for teachers to be stupid, to keep it simple, teach them the ABCs, only teach them about books and keep it real limited. Because you know what that'll do? That'll make the kids so mad by the time they're 18, they'll take drugs, rebel, and create great music, like that new band you got, Broken Social Space, which got that big hit that Dave Neufeld did.
Yeah.
They'll create new products in reaction. So evil is the source of our solving our problems. We have to be more evil, and we're being more evil. And I use the word evil to evoke all the images people have of it, because those images are harmless compared to the small evil we live with inside of ourselves and are not defining properly.
Yeah.
So sell more capital E evil and help Bob spread small e evil.
All right. Sounds good.
That sounds good, Daisy, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Proof there. We just proved it. Slaver, another person convinced that evil's where it's at.
Very good. Well, I mean, it's interesting to me to talk about these things. I did do a bit of study of postmodernism in my university days, right?
And so where did you, what university?
I went to Queens, and I did a degree in women's studies, right?
But right, so who, what professors, authors, do you remember the Croakers?
No, I did, I read Foucault.
Yes.
Right, and then took
Kristeva?
No.
Or Lucia Irigaray?
No.
Oh. Okay, what feminist, Catherine McKinnon is her name?
Yes, McKinnon, of course, I read, and she's the one with the pornography.
Right.
She writes a lot about pornography. But actually, I did a lot with Judith Butler, and so I don't know if you know about
I haven't read her books, but I know she's a big authority in that world.
Yeah, she is, and she talks a lot about gender identity and those sorts of things in the postmodernist world, and how are we creating or dismantling gender identities, right? And so...
is she a teacher at Queens, or just someone you took her books?
No, she's someone I read her books. I did actually my thesis with... professor named Ratiba Haj Musa, who's now teaching at York in media studies. And so, you know, these sort of ideas about media and signs and signifiers and communication and
you know them.
Yeah, I know them, but they're very hard to apply, I guess, in a day-to-day life where I'm trying to do more physical and practical.
Okay,
things,
look at the, let's
know?
Define our terms. Those are book terms.
Yep.
Academia had to come up with a bunch of jargon 30 years ago to keep itself going, the human sciences.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, but it doesn't apply to the TV body or chip body. So when you say practical, you got to deal with people living within these other bodies, and a book body is very puny.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, they fail.
Yeah.
It was good and interesting when you had time to engage your print self in university. But you had to drop it as soon as you move into the other worlds that are swirling around at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's what's happening. Now, I would recommend, if you don't know of her, I think her name is Catherine Hales, H-A-Y-L-E-S. Have you ever heard of her?
No.
Okay, her book is called How We Became Post-Human.
Okay.
And remember, the theme here has been how we've already died and gone to heaven, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
That may be a human metaphor, but the post-human refers to it. But she's not saying that. She's advocating how to retrieve the human in a certain level, like Rick Salutin. But she's fully aware of all the science fiction, all the POMO stuff that's happened. And she's very big now. But I would suggest that she would cut through all that you learned and update it, and you'd have enough knowledge to appreciate what she does. So there's a book, How We Became Posthuman, deals with feminism in a new way. She's the Judith Butler of now, so to speak.
All right.
Was Butler a Canadian or American?
American.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's someone I'd recommend if you get a chance. If you ever do get the opportunity to read again, which I understand you may not.
You never know. Actually, I applied to go back to law school next year, so I may be reading a lot of things, but they'll probably all be very... routine.
right. You won't have a chance to...
experience.
So you won't be allowed to read stuff that doesn't apply.
Presume a certain structure, right? Like
right.
Law school presumes a certain structure.
Yeah, you'll just be a worker.
Yeah.
There, you know, reading what you have to read on the assembly line.
Oh, well.
It won't solve your, let's say, it won't solve the big problems, but it'll solve your local problems.
Yeah.
Of what to do with your energy.
Well, I guess so. I don't really have too many problems finding something to do with my energy, but I thought law
school
would
be a
good
thing.
That's what I
mean. You can act locally.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think we should think, what is it? Think globally, act locally? That's a real misnomer. We are all living globally and even beyond.
Yeah.
So you can't think or act locally. You're doing it globally. Now, what do you call getting a perspective on that, which is what we began this conversation about? You know, what's the point? That activity, whatever you want to call it, is... what one should take a lot of time to find a way to apply it in themselves.
Yeah.
And I'm offering the way to do it. So even though you're going to be doing, have no problem with dispensing your energy, you got to find out how to do that invisible energy of looking at what's happening and how to define it.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing, right? Once you've gone and you've figured out what you're doing in the physical body and you're aware that this is the screen body and this is the chip body, I mean, how does that all filter up to the astral body, and how do your, I mean, is the phrase think locally, act globally, or whatever it is?
Yeah.
Is that another interpretation of the physical to astral body?
Yes, and they're not dealing with the TV or screen body, the
yeah.
screen or chip body.
Mm-hmm.
That nobody's dealing with what I'm talking about.
No, well, I mean, because people are too immersed in media to be able to, in those two forms of media, to step back from them, right?
That's right.
You know?
So I would say that is, in light of the war and destruction and media hurricane that's coming and going to keep coming for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
What I'm suggesting for you is a way for you to get personal detachment from it and a bit of calm, recover the utopia that you've always had. That's what the point is here.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And I mean, on the counterpoint to that is the point of this screen body and this chip body producing or overproducing messages, right?
Yes.
Is to confuse people enough so that they can't act on the physical level.
Right.
Or understand their connection to the astral level, or their connection is not the right word there. They're part in the astral body, right?
Their remembrance of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's all very irritating to have to listen to these reports on the Iraqi attack on Iraq, which half of my theory is that George Bush is happy to attack Iraq because it rhymes with, these words rhyme, right? Like attack and Iraq.
Yeah, yeah, that's good.
He must be very pleased with himself, right?
Yes.
You know, but
that's the only rhyming he can do in this rap hip-hop world.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I mean, these are very sort of depressing media things that are going on in the screen world.
Yeah, if you, but you don't need to pay attention to it.
No, no. And that's where my idea of the media fast is coming from.
Yeah, I agree. Well, if that's your interpretation, that's the beginning. That's good enough.
Yeah.
Because there's no news. I mean, I'm in New York and I carry a gas mask around with me and I know I'm going to have to one day use it.
Yeah.
Okay? That's all I need in terms of my survival. And I may not survive. But the thing is, there's nothing that's going to happen that will affect me until it happens to me.
Yeah. Well, the last time I was in New York was during the Elian Gonzalez affair.
Yeah.
Right? Which was another one of those media media feeding frenzies.
Yeah.
That just made me realize, wow, the American people are really hard challenged to find any perspective in their screen media. You
right.
know, how can they connect to the outside world when the only thing they hear about for 2 weeks is this one boy?
And that also shows, you could say this, that story is a TV story, not a chip story.
Mm-hmm.
And people are living in their chip world, so they're nostalgic for the TV body. And that may be, since OJ, why there's been so much hysteria in the TV body,
mm-hmm.
because that's an attempt of these four bodies to connect. And they want to connect a TV story, so they make a big deal out of these stories. So that answers Rick Salutin's question, why there is so much concentration. It's the chip body, which is prominent now,
yeah.
having nostalgia for the screen body, and will take something that has a slight human scale reference to the physical body and just wallow in it for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That explains that.
I know I'm going back to some, I've been using the words chip body, but explain to me exactly. Is the chip body, is the network like the internet?
Yes, the internet, the fiber optic lines, the cables over the oceans, the satellite hookups, everything that allows you to use the cell phone.
Okay, but these things interact to some degree with our screen body.
Oh, they force the screen body to be what it is.
Yeah.
That's the point. These bodies are interacting, and these categories are tenuous, temporary, because they all become one thing. We are so much one thing now.
Mm-hmm.
But it can't be expressed verbally or in any particular type of media. One media can't say the whole thing. But if you just say the five bodies, it's like saying it's cold out today.
Yeah.
Real simple statement, that's accurate.
Yeah, it's amazing, I guess, how much people presume they're able to communicate given these degrees of confusion and you know.
Oh, but that's the ecology. We are communicating.
Yeah.
It's just, and scientists have had to come up with new theories, the chaos theory, all these different things, catastrophe theory, are the best they can come up with in terms of old media like paper, graphs, and writing, and mouth.
Yeah.
Those old media, they come up, well, it's a chaos situation. And that's just a model, a puny model, to how the incredible wealth and utopia and efficiency that we're doing all around the world.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. Well, I don't know. Matt said he had something to do at 4. It is 4, so should we check in?
Yeah, I think it's. I've run the gamut here. I've dominated too much. I just miss everything I've said the past hour. I must move on to the next moment.
Well, you know, I'm sure you'll have lots of exciting moments on your birthday. You have
yes.
planned, right?
I already have, and you've been one of them, Susan.
Well, that's great.
I've enjoyed being inside you.
Thanks for your time, too.
And you've been inside
me. Yes, indeed.
So I hope to hear from you again. Come back for a second round.
I will. Thank
okay,
you very
Susan.
Much, Bob.
You're welcome. It was great.
Bye-bye.
Bye.